This is episode number 30 with Jocko Willink. Welcome to another episode of Start It Up. I'm your host, Don Wetrick, classroom teacher, author, and innovation enthusiast. This is the podcast where we talk about startup culture, leadership, and what the future might hold for education by some of the most successful innovators, authors, and entrepreneurs. Welcome back, everybody. Today's episode, you are going to love, love, love. Our guest today is Jocko Willink. He is a retired United States Navy SEAL who received both silver and bronze medals. He is a best-selling author with his book, Extreme Ownership. And quite frankly, he is among the most motivational persons I've ever heard speak in my life. Today's episode was an unusual one. Instead of it being recorded in my studio, I decided to have him talk to our students at our high school. And also giving credit where credit's due, the reason why I came on to this guy's book was our weights and conditioning coach, Brian Clark, who lent me the book a long time ago. And he said, man, this guy's awesome. So I had the luck of getting Jocko on the podcast. And one thing Brian wanted to do is, hey, let's broadcast this from the school and let's have it in our weight room. So the visual of this was amazing. We had a lot of kids in the weight room and we streamed it live. So instead of this being a normal podcast, you know, just in a Q&A kind of style with just the host and the guest, it is hosted by our students. And I think for that reason, you are going to love this episode. He has a lot of points that I don't want to steal just yet. So therefore, I'm just going to get it started right now. So without further ado, the one, the only, Jocko Willink. First of all, thank you for joining us. They've been introduced. A lot of the kids know who you are. Some of the podcasts, some have read your book. Actually, on behalf of someone who's read your book, both Coach Clark and I have really been inspired by your book. And a lot of times we talk about what it takes to be, what extreme ownership means. And seeing that you wrote a book on it, through the lens of being a student, could you please explain to our students why there is so much freedom and discipline and what extreme ownership is to you?
Well, fortunately for everyone there, I actually have four kids of my own. So I have to talk about extreme ownership with my kids on a fairly regular basis, especially when it comes to school. And, you know, extreme ownership is really simple. It means you're not going to make any excuses. You're not going to blame anybody else when something goes wrong. And you're going to take ownership of what's going on in your world. And with school, the classic example is you don't do well on a test and you want to blame the teacher because they didn't teach you well. Or you want to blame the book because it didn't explain it well. And those are all just excuses. And the bottom line is if you didn't understand something, you go back to the teacher, you find a different resource, you make things happen so that you understand the information, you drill yourself on it and test yourself on it until you understand it 100%, and then you crush the test. That's what extreme ownership is in a school situation.
So one of the things that I liked about your book is you talked about, you know, you have to go up the chain of command. So speaking on behalf of teachers, what if you don't believe necessarily on what education is anymore? For a student that wants to be able to think for themselves, how do you deal with going up the chain of command when the current educational system makes you want to just conform to the old ways of doing things?
Well, this is where you're going to find a little dichotomy with my personality, because I'm going to always, whatever framework is put in front of me, I'm going to take it and I'm going to utilize it to the best of my ability. So when I was in the military, there's a lot of framework that gets put in front of you. When you're in a school system, there's a lot of framework that gets put in front of you and they say, this is the way you're going to do things. And so if you just rebel against it and say, no, I'm not going to do what they say, well, number one, you're not going to get any value whatsoever out of what they are teaching you. And in any framework, there's going to be some value in it. So if you reject it all, you're just going to lose out on everything. And on top of that, if you reject what framework is put in front of you, now they're going to reject you as well. They're not going to listen to what your recommendations are. They're not going to hear what you're saying. And so what I did and what I've done my whole life is when they put a framework in front of me, when they put rules in front of me, when they tell me to conform to this, I go, okay, cool. I'll conform. I'm going to conform more than anybody else that you have ever met before. And then once I've proven that I can conform and I can live and thrive within their little system, then I say, oh, guess what? Your system is actually holding us back and we need to take it to the next level. So I'm going to look at the framework. I'm going to utilize the framework. I'm going to maximize the framework. And then I'm going to overcome and I'm going to crush the framework. So in an educational system, I'm going to take those classes. I'm going to say, oh, yeah, you taught us A, B, and C. Guess what I found out? There's also D, E, F that you haven't even addressed yet. I'd like to do a report on that. I'd like to tell the rest of the kids some follow-on information that you haven't even addressed yet, which I think is more important than the original information you gave us. So yes, that's what I'm going to do. That's how I'm going to handle it. I'm going to get aggressive in conforming, and I'm going to conform so hard that they're going to have to let me free.
Next question is with a student. Go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Willink. My name is Sean Johnson. I'm currently a CEO prospect in the delayed entry program. My question to you, as I grow closer and closer to my current ship date, July 31st, is what advice do you have for the upcoming generation of CEO prospects like myself?
I would say the same advice that I would have given somebody 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Train really hard to prepare for basic SEAL training. And that means run, that means swim, that means do pull-ups, push-ups, dips, swim with fins, work on your breath holds, be very, very comfortable in the water, be very, very comfortable in the cold, be very, very comfortable when you're tired, and be in good physical condition when you show up there. And when you get to BUDS, it's fun. I had a blast there. You get paid to work out all day. You get paid to go to the beach all day. They give you four meals a day, man, four meals a day. All you can eat. It's insane. It's awesome. It's fun. And so I had a great time going through SEAL training, and I would just say be prepared. And then the final piece of advice is when you show up, don't quit. And I mean, people say everyone thinks about quitting during SEAL training. I never thought about quitting during SEAL training. I never thought about it for a microsecond. And so don't think about it. Go through the training. And then realize this, that basic SEAL training is, and BUDS and all that means nothing when you get to the SEAL teams. It means nothing. Everyone has gone through it. No one cares. It's not that big of a deal. As hard as it is to go through BUDS, which means you're going to be wet, cold, and you're going to be fatigued, all of which is actually fun things, when you get to the SEAL teams and when you go on deployment overseas, you're going to be doing things where you can die. And the difference between being wet and cold and tired and being put in a situation day after day after day after day where there's a possibility that you get severely wounded or killed or your friends get severely wounded or killed, that's what the SEAL teams is. And the final piece of it is the job of a SEAL is to go out and kill people, go out and kill bad guys. So make sure that that's what you want to do. Make sure that you're comfortable with not only putting your own life at risk, but taking other people's lives, and then show up and kick ass in the training.
Just wanted to say I have a lot of respect for you and what you've done for our country, and just want to give just ultimately a thanks from my fellow classmates and from the rest of the civilian populace as is. So thank you, Mr. Wang.
Yeah, I appreciate it, but I can tell you right now, I had a very nice, easy career. I had a fantastic time doing it, and there's plenty of guys, hundreds of thousands of men and women that have sacrificed way more than I ever did. So direct your thanks to them, please.
I'm sure you'll be hearing from Coach Clark, but Coach Clark and I've got a class that's an innovation open source learning class. We want students to think for themselves, and it's an hour and a half of their day to where they set their own goals and they accomplish things that they want. Same thing with Coach Clark. He runs a weight room where he wants the students to think for themselves. Other than athletics, in your chapter of Cover and Move, which I loved, how would you recommend a student adopt the mentality of cover and move when they might not necessarily belong to a team?
Here's the deal. You're not going to get anywhere in the world alone. That's all there is to it. You might not be part of a team, but you're not going to get anywhere in the world alone. I know I sure as hell didn't get anywhere in the world alone. I was constantly with either friends that weren't part of my team, and people that were pushing me along, people that when I was a kid growing up. So one of the best things to do as a human is to support and help other people. And when you're constantly putting others before yourself, that's what's going to make you a good teammate in the long run. And again, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to give anything back to you. If I'm giving something to you, and I'm only doing it because I'm anticipating something in return, that kind of is against what I'm preaching, which is I'm giving something to you and I hope you do well with it. And if you never give anything back to me, that's okay. So that's the attitude I'm going to have with other people, whether they're on my team or not. I'm trying to help people out. And the more you do that in your life, the better off you're going to turn out.
My name is Drew Hardman. I'm a senior here. And my question is, what motivates you to get up at 4 a.m. every morning? Because 4:30 every morning, because I know that you post to Twitter every day with the watch and the date. So what motivates you to do that?
So what motivates me to get up in the morning? What motivates me to get up in the morning is that I'm alive. I'm alive. And you're alive. And that should be enough to motivate you to get up in the morning. This opportunity that you have as a human being, as a free human being living in America, that should be enough. You should barely even be able to get to sleep at night. I know I can barely get to sleep at night. And when the alarm clock goes off in the morning, I'm getting out of bed because I have this opportunity to go out there and make things happen. So again, going back to the sacrifices that hundreds and thousands and millions of people have made to give us this free country, the day that you stay in bed and rest and sleep and don't get up and take advantage of what opportunities you have out there, you're squandering the sacrifices of millions of people that fought and died for our freedom. So when your alarm clock goes off, get up, get out of bed, and get after it.
Hi, my name is Luke Rex. I'm a junior at Noblesville. My question is, what advice would you give to a 16, 17, 18-year-old younger version of yourself?
Well, I'll tell you right now, when I was a kid, when I was 16, 17 years old, I did not have the kind of guidance that you guys are getting right now. The fact that you guys are in a gym with your coaches, setting this up, putting this huge investment into you guys is absolutely phenomenal. I didn't have anything like that. I found my own path through a little bit of luck, a little bit of determination, and basically rumors about what the world was like. And so the fact that you guys have, you know, Coach Clark and Don here trying to give you guys good guidance is phenomenal. The biggest thing that you don't do as kids is we don't listen. Even as adults, we don't listen. And so when you get the opportunity to hear from people that are investing in you, listen to what they say. You might not agree with everything. You might not agree with what they're telling you. I'll tell you this, though. If somebody's telling you something, listen to it. At least do an assessment of what they're saying. Realize that a person that's investing in you, why are they doing it? What does Don want from you back? Have you guys signed a contract with them that where they're going to get 12% of your annual income when you get out of high school, and they're going to get paid back on that? Is that what they're looking for? Do you owe them some sort of property value that when you buy a house, you're going to have to give them some percentage of the property that you own? Are they looking for that? Are they, you know, I don't know what they're asking for, but think about it. You know what they're asking for? Nothing. What I talked about earlier, when you give, that's going to be your success. Well, that's what they're doing. They're doing this because that's their reward. Their reward is to see you out, go out and be successful. So when they're telling you something, listen to it. Assess what they're saying. Again, at the end of the day, you make your own decisions. You make your own decisions. And you're the person that's going to live with those decisions for the rest of your life or death or wherever you end up. But when people are giving you good, solid advice, listen to them. I didn't. When I was a kid, I didn't listen to anybody. I was too stupid and too bullheaded. And no one sat me down in a classroom and went over the way things were going to go in my life. Thank God I joined the military, because otherwise I'd be a disaster, because I wouldn't listen to people. So when you're younger, when you're 16 years old, 17 years old, 18 years old, listen to what people are saying, absorb it, thinking about it. And most important, put it into context with the rest of the world. And that's something that we really miss out on. I think we miss out on the educational world, and we miss out on it in the personal world, is how do you take what people are telling you and put it into context with your life? So when somebody tells you, hey, you need to elevate your grade in your English class, and you just think to yourself, you know what, who cares about English? Well, put it into context with the rest of your life. There's all kinds of things that that affects in the world. When you're taking an English class, for instance, it's going to teach you to read and write better. If you can't read and absorb information, you're not going to be able to improve yourself on your own. You're always going to be relying on somebody else to teach you. If you can't write well, then when you have to convey something to someone, you're not going to be able to do it in writing as eloquently as you should be able to. Speaking, if you don't pay attention to English class, you don't learn your vocabulary words, you're not going to have the tools that are required, especially if you're going in the military and you want to convey directions to people or chain of command, you up and down the chain of command, you got to communicate. If you don't have a good vocabulary, you're going to be inhibited when you try and do that. On top of that, when you're trying to do well in English class, which seems stupid and you don't care, guess what? That takes discipline. And so to go home and study takes discipline. So you're improving the discipline in your life. And on top of that, you're going to get a good grade, which good grades in high school are going to open opportunities for you in life. That's where discipline equals freedom. You know, discipline equals freedom, because the harder you work and the more disciplined you are, the better life you're going to have. I'll tell you what, to be honest with you right now, my life is a joke right now. It's ridiculous. I never could have imagined I'd be living the life that I'm living right now. Never could have imagined it. I've got so much freedom in my life to do whatever I want. It's ridiculous. But I'll tell you that came from years and years and years of hard work and discipline and being frugal and saving money and studying and learning and writing. All those things build up. So when you get told something, when you get told advice, put it into context with the rest of your life so that it makes true sense to what you're trying to accomplish.
In your book, you talked about prioritizing and executing. A lot of students are really busy. They've got a lot of classes. They may have a lot of homework. Your chapter on prioritizing and executing, what advice would you give for a student who is extremely busy with homework and everything else? How do they prioritize and seemingly put things in place?
Well, your mind, you've got to prioritize first. You've got to prioritize your mind first. One of the things that's cool about when you're studying and when you're using your mind to work is your mind's going to need to take breaks. So, for instance, last couple weeks, I've been finishing up some writing, some projects that I'm doing, and I was writing. I almost always work out early in the morning, but for these 2 weeks, I was actually waking up and writing right away, wearing my brain out a little bit till it needed rest. Then I go in the gym and let my brain rest while I work my body. So that's one thing you can do, is you can prioritize and execute, but you got to put your mind first. That takes the most focus to do studying and to do writing and to do creative things. So make that your number one priority with what you do. Then the second priority is your body. Now, what I dread to think is that a lot of you are busy because you're busy watching YouTube videos, or you're busy playing video games, or you're busy on Instagram, or you're busy on Snapchat. So just don't get busy with any of that stuff, because it's a waste. And the other things that eat your time up is when you're sitting around and you're not focused on what's happening. So if you can't mentally focus anymore on doing mental work, then take a break and do your physical work. And then when you're done with your physical work, now you're going to want a physical rest, and then it's easy to get back into the mental work.
My name is Mackenzie, and I'm a senior here at Noblesville. And my question is, what advice would you give our young athletes here to develop their ownership and leadership qualities?
The number one thing you can do to improve your ownership and leadership qualities is to actually take ownership of stuff. And that's exactly what you have to do. That's what I did. And I've talked about this all the time. When you take ownership of things, it spreads. It spreads throughout your whole team. It spreads to other people around you. But I'll tell you this, it is very hard to take ownership if you let your ego get in the way. If you let your ego get in the way and you say, hey, you know what? Coach put me in at the wrong time. Coach should have made this call. Billy dropped the ball. Jimmy didn't make the tackle. You sit there and blame all these other people on why you or your team fails. And that right there is the beginning of the end. Because when you don't take ownership of the problems that are in your life, you're not going to get those problems solved. So the number one thing you do is whenever you hear yourself making an excuse, giving a reason, and pushing the blame onto someone else, stop. Now, does that mean that there's never a reason why you fail? No, there's going to be a reason. Absolutely. And then the question is, how do you take that reason, assess? I just heard Coach Clark say, assess. How can I fix that? Not sit here and shoot holes at other people and throw blame on other people. How can I assess that and get it corrected? What can I do? If it's Jimmy dropped the ball, maybe I need to go and throw a bunch of balls to Jimmy so he gets better at catching. You know, what can I do to fix the problem? And that's what leadership is all about.
If you're a CEO, or in our case, our teachers have an ego or an attitude that we don't necessarily agree with, what would be the advice that you would give to us or to the person under the chain of command?
Yeah. You're going to deal with big egos your whole life, no matter what you do. That's the way it is. Everyone's got an ego. I've got an ego. Deshaun, you've got an ego. Who else we have? Luke, McKenzie, you all have egos. They all get in there. And when you deal with people that have egos, that's what you have to do. You have to work around those egos. And I talk about this all the time. What you don't do, you don't attack their egos. This is a fundamental principle of combat, that you don't attack strengthened enemy positions head on. You don't do it. It's from Sun Tzu. Any warrior philosopher will tell you, don't attack hardened enemy positions on the front. So when you get somebody that's got a big ego, you don't attack their ego. You don't say, hey, teacher, you don't know what you're talking about, because then what are they going to do? They're going to get even more defensive. And they're going to say, Deshaun, what? You don't even know what you're talking about. You're 17 years old. You have no idea. I know this, this, and this. And they're going to put you in your place, and you're going to get attacked back, and now you're going to be in a worse position. They're going to build up their defenses even more. So instead, what you do is you flank that ego. Instead of attacking that ego head on like this, here's that big ego. You don't go head on with it. You go over here to the side and you give that ego a little massage. You get inside their head. You get on their good side so that they will listen to you. Because the minute I say, hey, teacher, you don't know what you're talking about on this. Are they listening? Are they listening anymore to what I'm saying? What do you think? Absolutely not. Even if I say to Don, hey, Don, the way you're running this program, it's not going to work. I don't like it. Now, what's Don thinking? He's been doing it for X amount of years. He's had really good results with it. He's not going to listen to another word I said. Now, if I said, Don, man, the program that you're running is awesome. Got these guys like that. You did this. I see you've gotten focused on strength and discipline. That's really cool. Here's another thing you might be able to add that would be helpful. Don's all ears now. He's all ears. He's listening. He's going, wow, Jocko really likes the program. He thinks it's great. So that's what I'm going to do. Instead of hitting that thing head on and saying, Don, don't like your program. Need to change these things right now if you want it to be at all effective. Don's going to reject me. If I say, Don, your program's awesome. I can't believe how far you've taken it. I'm looking at the kids. They look super squared away. That's amazing. You know, one thing that might be really good to add is this thing over here. And Don's going to say, sounds great. That's a good idea. I like it. And that's how we get around the egos that people have. We don't attack the egos. We flank them.
My name is Thomas. I'm a junior. And I was wondering what your process was to mentally prepare yourself for a difficult mission.
So to prepare for a mission, and people talk about this mental preparation, I prepared for missions. That's all I did my whole life, was prepare for missions. So, and also, I talked about this on the podcast, when you're getting ready to do a mission, it's not like you're sitting around waiting in a locker room for the game time to start, and you're going to just have time to be to yourself and think about what's going to happen. It's not like that at all. You've got gear to prep. You've got deconfliction to do with other units. You've got things to run up through the chain of command. You've got inventories to take. You've got personnel that you need to get organized. You've got briefs to give. So what you're doing until you roll out on the operations, you're working. You're busy. There is no sitting around time thinking about, okay, let me go into my Zen state about what's going to happen on this mission. It doesn't happen. You don't have time for that. So we prepare for the mission mentally by training for years and years and years, by discipline training, by training hard, by training for worst case scenarios, by knowing what our capabilities and our limitations are. And when the time comes to go on the mission, we lock and load our weapons, we roll out, and we get after it. And if you're, that's why if you take that and you reverse engineer it, you take it back to your training, what that means is when it comes time for the mission, you're not gonna have any time to think, how can I mentally prepare better? You're not gonna have any time to think, can I go shoot a couple more rounds and make sure I'm dialed in? You won't have any time to think, can I have a few more minutes to get my gear the way I want it situated? No, that's not gonna happen. Your preparation is everything. Your physical preparation. When you're training, push yourself as hard as you can. So when the moment comes, you're ready. In your training, you prepare your gear and you use it just the way you're gonna use it in real life. So when the time comes to the mission, you're ready. Your mental preparation, you think about what you're gonna do, you exercise, you go through these plans and procedures in your head. So when the game time comes and the mission comes, you're ready. So that's why we train hard. That's why we train focused. And that's why we make our training as realistic as possible, because we wanna be ready when the time comes. And to be honest with you, there's not time when a mission is coming up where you're sitting around and saying, okay, I need to mentally prepare for this. I mentally prepared my whole life for every mission that I went on, and that's the way it works.
My name is Will Schultz. I'm a senior here at Noblesville High School, and I'm wondering how you control both your breathing and emotions in times of extreme adversity.
Yeah, so the biggest thing with controlling your emotions is you just have to, over time, starts when you guys are your age, when you start getting emotional, don't be emotional. You can't let yourself get emotional. We all know we make bad decisions when we're emotional. We all know we're not thinking straight when we're emotional. We all know we rush when we're emotional. So we can't get emotional. And the way I got over that was I realized that getting emotional was a weakness. And I don't like weakness. So if I'm going to get emotional, I immediately thought, okay, I'm being weak right now. That's what's happening. And so stop. So what you have to do is detach. You know, you hear me talk about this all the time. You have to detach from that emotion. You have to detach from that situation. You have to take a step back, take a breath, and not be embroiled in that emotional chaos that's going on. That's what you have to do. So as far as breathing methodology, I'm not a guy that does any breathing exercises. I mean, I breathe, I guess, because I have to in order to live. I have to breathe. But, you know, when you breathe in, you know, when I'm training mixed martial arts, when I'm training jiu-jitsu, you have to keep track of your breathing a little bit. But one thing I do notice is this. When you are getting emotional, where you can hear it very clearly is in your tone of voice. And so if you get emotional about something, you'll start to hear it in your own voice when you start doing this right here. And that to me was always an indication, oh, you're getting emotional. So one of the key things that we do in the military is when you talk on the radio, you always should have the calmest, most collected voice. And in order to do that, you can't be all excited and all emotion and all breathing heavy. You have to get control of your breathing. So I just try it always. I just call it normal breathing, right? I just call it normal breathing. I used to play this game with my kids when they were younger. I had and please don't report me to child services or whatever for doing this with my kids, but I had the wrapping paper, the cardboard wrapping paper, you know, those long, they're like a cardboard sword. So I would take my kids and I would line them up and I would say, you have to keep a normal face, just a totally normal face like this. And if they didn't make a normal face, I hit them with that cardboard. And then I'd get in front of them and I'd scare them, or I'd try and make them laugh. And if they laughed, I'd hit them. Or if they got scared, I'd hit them. And again, it's just a cardboard thing. And it was just fun. And I'd say, keep your normal face, keep your normal face. Because I wanted my kids to be able to control their emotions when they're dealing with other people. And it's the same thing. That's what I want. I want to have a normal face and I want to have a normal breath. That's all I want. And so think about how you're breathing. Think about what your expression is on your face. So many people are so easy to read because their faces, they just give away their emotions and it's really easy to read them. And once you know what a person's thinking, once you know what your enemy's thinking, it's really easy to beat them. Once you know what a person's thinking in a conversation, it's really easy to win. Or it's really easy to de-escalate, or it's really easy to flank them. So my goal is to have normal face and normal breathing.
Hello, I'm McGuire, I'm a senior. here at Noblesville, we are taught like adversity is going to strike and you can't control the adversity, but what you can control is like your response. And I was wondering if you had any like advice for controlling your response.
Well, that's great and very true. You can't always control what the enemy is going to do. You can't always control what adversity is going to hit you. And my response is going to be aggressive. That's simply put, if there's adversity coming my way, what I'm not going to do is hide from it. What I'm not going to do is put my head in the sand and hope that it goes away. What I'm not going to do is keep my fingers crossed and look in the other direction while adversity gets a better chokehold on me. No, if adversity is coming, I am going to stand up and I'm going to attack it. And I recommend you do the same.
Hey, my name is Jacob. I'm a senior here in Noblesville. And something that Don talks about a lot is there's a correct way to fail. You want to, when you do encounter failure, you want to fail correctly and fail forward. And I was wondering if you had any advice or personal experiences with failure and how you bounce back from that and failing the correct way instead of just giving up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've failed more than anyone in that room times 1,000. I can promise you that right now. Well, I guess maybe with the exception of Don and Coach Clark, it's possible. But I've you know, you're going to go through life and life is a series of failures. You're going to have some wins in there as well. So when you fail, good. How do I fix it? What do I do to do it right the next time? How do I stand back up, dust off, reload, and reattack? Failure to me is just a learning experience. And failure to me also, when you see someone fail, give them respect and see what you can do to help them out. Because when someone fails around you, you should be saying, you know what? That person stepped up. That person pushed themselves further than they could handle. And that's a positive thing. So when I see people fail around me, that's one thing that I don't like when people do is they see someone fail and they want to jab at them. They want to pull them down. No, when you see someone fail, you should be thinking that person stepped up. That person had courage and they showed courage and they went beyond their comfort zone. So when you fail, you should feel the same thing. Hey, you know what? Obviously I wasn't quite prepared for that. What can I do to get prepared next time? Failure is just learning. No big deal. Deal with it. Learn from it. Move on.
Okay, so coming at it from the different angle, as teachers, you've done a masterful job of getting people to take responsibility for themselves. I do a podcast for teachers primarily. How do other teachers inspire great leadership? Obviously, the old ways of the past is I do and you have to. But how do you gain the respect of the students to where they feel like they're in charge of themselves?
The best way to get people to take ownership is to give them ownership. That's the way it works. The best way is to give people ownership. So for instance, Don, if you and I were going to run some kind of a mission and I was in charge of you and I said, hey, Don, we're going to hit this target tonight. Here, it's this building 49 down in the city. We're going to hit building 49. And I want you to go in there. I want you to take this road. I want you to use this number of vehicles. I want you to take this many guys with you. I want you to approach from this door. I want you to use this methodology of clearing the building. Once you get there. Basically, if I gave you every detail of how I wanted you to execute that plan, whose plan would it be, first of all? It'd be my plan, clearly. Now, how much ownership of that plan would you have? Now, sure, maybe you and I have a great working relationship and we know each other really well. And we have a lot of mutual respect for each other. Even if all that was completely maximized, the plan is still mine. The plan is still mine because I gave it to you, I created it. So even if you take as much ownership as you can of that plan, it still isn't truly your plan. So what's going to happen is when you hit your first obstacle, you go, oh, man, you know, I wish we wouldn't have been doing it this way. I wish I would have been involved in the planning. I would have done something a little bit different. And now you're going to get pushed back and maybe you even don't get over those obstacles on the way to the target. Now we fail the mission. Now, contrarily, if I said to you, Don, hey, got this mission tonight. We're going to hit building 49 down in the city. Come up with a plan. Tell me how you want to execute it. Now you come up with a plan, you come up with a route, you come up with a methodology, you figure out how many vehicles you're taking, you come up with a list of guys that you want to bring with you. Boom, you come up with everything. Now it truly is your plan. Now, we both have the same similar tactical upbringing. Is your plan gonna be so far away from mine that it's unacceptable to me? No, it's gonna be close enough. I might say, hey Don, think about this, or hey Don, push a little bit over there, or hey, maybe you need to bring this. But the broad plan is gonna be yours. It's gonna be yours. And now when you go out on that mission and you hit a little obstacle, what do? You do everything in your power to overcome that obstacle because it's your mission, it's your plan, and you wanna win. And that's what I try and do with anybody that I work with. I don't want to own everything. I wanna give them the ownership, because when people have ownership, their performance skyrockets and they will win infinitely more than if they're being force-fed a plan. So if I have students, I'm gonna be talking to students about, hey, what do you wanna learn and why do you wanna learn it? Now I can give them some good guidance. You know, I was just talking to one of my daughters last night and I was just bringing a thread together about something she was learning in history and what it applies today. And you could see that she started thinking about what she's learning about the Ottoman Empire and how it applies to what's happening in the geopolitical world today. So when you can make those threads and you can explain things to people and put them in context, once again, I'll go back to context, but you give them some extra knowledge, you give them some reason, they start to understand how things tie together in the world and why it's important to learn it, not just to learn it, but to learn it to understand it, to learn it to have a better footing in the world, to learn it to have an intellectual advantage over other people. And that's a positive thing. You know, it's a positive thing to be able to have knowledge. That's the greatest power that human beings can have, is knowledge. So that's what I want to convey to kids. That's what I would try and convey to people when I'm trying to teach them. Why is it important that they understand it? Why is it important that they learn? How can it be their information, not my information that I'm force feeding them, but information that they openly want to bring into their world so they can perform better as human beings?
Yeah, let me push back though on you a little bit. I remember I asked you a question. I said, you know, why is everything right now so political? Why is everybody blaming everything for, you know, no one's taking responsibility? And your response was comfort and freedom. So what happens if the people that you're trying to motivate, let's just say, and not many students, but some, what happens if you're like, you bring them to the water, but they still don't want to drink because it's only a grade?
That, again, that means that I am not properly conveying the information to them. You know, if it was this easy in life, that when I say, hey, here's why we do it, Don, and Don says, oh, great, thanks for telling me, Jocko, and now he goes out and do it. That's not the way it is. That's not the way leadership is. We're not perfect. The people that you're dealing with are different. The kids that you're dealing with, yeah, they're looking at you saying, you've got to be kidding me. Hey, I don't care about this grade. I don't care if I get a C or a D or a B. It doesn't matter to me. What's it mean? You know, it doesn't matter to me. And that means, guess what? It doesn't mean it's their fault. It doesn't mean that you can say, yeah, see, they don't get it. It means it's your fault. It means that you are not, you haven't taken the right route to get there. You went at them like this. You said, hey, you need to get a good grade because it's going to help your future. And not one thing that you said got through to them. So what do? Blame them? Or do you say, okay, what can I do? What route do I have to take? What adjustment can I take in my world to get them to understand this? I'm failing to get them to understand. And how can I make that happen? What do I need to show them? What part of the world do I need to show them? And I've got four kids. Each one of my kids, I have to use a different route to make them understand things. They all are completely different. Even though they were raised by my wife and I and in the same house together, they have different personalities and they understand things differently. So if I'm failing to get through to somebody, I can't just sit there and say, yep, they're stupid, they don't get it. I have to say, okay, how can I make them understand? What piece am I missing? Who can I bring in to talk to them so that they don't understand, so that they understand in a more clear way? You know, when you've got kids that are starting to go down the path of being in trouble, who can you talk to? Who can you bring to talk to them that, you know, don't bring me. Bring somebody that's been in trouble. Bring somebody that's been in jail before. Bring somebody that's been addicted to drugs before. And show them what that world looks like. That's a nightmare. That's a nightmare. And it's a nightmare that starts off as a dream. It's a nightmare that starts off as a nice, nice, pretty dream where everyone's fun and happy and having a good time. And it ends up in a nightmare of hell where people are falling apart and dying because of decisions that they made. So when I'm not getting my message across to people, I have to figure out, reassess, how can I explain this in a different way that they will understand.
How are you doing today? My name is Robert. I just wanted to know, what's your advice to those kids and young people who are still struggling to try to find their purpose in life?
Yeah, I think that different people are going to find a purpose in life at a different time. But one thing I would say is this. If you don't know what your purpose is, and you're not sure which direction that you're going to head in your life, then let me give you some decent advice. You don't know where you're going, so get as prepared as you can right now for any of those options that are going to come your way. That's what you want to do. You could go from anywhere from being an astronaut to being a firefighter to being a school teacher to being a coach to being a doctor. Any one of those things that you may find in your purpose in the future, any of them will be augmented by the way you're living right now, the way you carry yourself right now, your performance as a human being right now, the amount that you learn, the physical way that you take care of your body, the relationships that you build with people. All those things that you're doing right now or that you have the opportunity to do right now will be a massive asset to you regardless of where you end up in the world. Regardless of where you end up in the world, the things that you're doing today will help you tomorrow. So you might not know what your purpose is right now, but you can still prepare for anything in the world by getting stronger, by getting smarter, by getting better today.
Thank you so much. You're sending ripples of hope for a lot of students, and we can get more students to take extreme ownership. Like you said, that all of a sudden spreads to their friends and their friends' friends. So from the bottom of my heart, and from Coach Clark. Coach Clark, you want to say anything?
Thank you so much, sir. It's an honor and very humbling.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So, and if there's anything you want from us, please let us know in the future.
Yeah, there is one thing I want.
Name it.
You guys go out, crush the world. Have
done.
A good one.
Thanks so much, sir. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please press that subscribe button and tell your friends. If you get on Twitter, let us know what you think at Let's Start It Up, or you can find me at Don Wetrick. Also, if you know of a rock star entrepreneur or author that has a passion for education reform, please let us know. We'll try to get him on the show. You can email me directly at don@startitupinnovation.com. Join us again next week as we interview another guest that challenges us to think, innovate, and transform. Until then, remember that to create and serve fosters a life of purpose and abundance. And those opportunities are everywhere. Thanks for listening.